Christmas story so often that we began to take it for granted. Anybody ever experienced that? You know, we've heard it, same old, you know. And I think the journey of the wise men is maybe one that we take for granted the most without really thinking about what they went through in order to get there. First, we often speak of them as wise men or kings, but do we know what did Matthew call them? The Magi, yes, that's right. They were called Magi. That actually comes from an English word, magician. They weren't really magicians, by the way. They were more likely priests who studied the stars and who believed, you know, in that the relative position of the stars were signs of future events. They're likely from Persia, which is today's Iran. Some of you may have been there. I don't know, you know. And they likely didn't get there while Jesus was still at the manger. And the reason we know that is, it would have taken them a long time to set their affairs in order, to do a collection of the gifts that they were going to bring, right? They probably likely had to obtain even an escort, like the MPs, you know, whatever it might be, right? Because they had to make this lengthy journey to Judea, and of course there were thieves and robbers on the way. They probably traveled about 1,000 miles on camelback. Now, how many of you here have ridden on a camel? Yeah, I can tell you, I don't want to ride 1,000 miles on one. And they spit. I know that too. I won't tell you how I know that, but I do know that. Okay? The wise men were just not a group of priests that got together. They were probably high-level dignitaries within the mighty Parthian Empire that existed at that time. And they would have yielded a lot of power and influence, all right? So we have to think about them in this respect. And most likely, when they were coming, they would bring gifts worthy of a king. We usually think of those little bitty boxes, you know, that we have at Christmas that people carry that they did. But, you know, one of the writers like Stephen Collins, he says this, "The Magi were not bringing just a few samples of gold. This Parthian delegation was offering money to a king and therefore more likely would have brought a whole train of packed animals loaded with gold, frankincense, and myrrh." Can you imagine being able to give that kind of wealth to God like these men did? When the Magi finally arrived, of course, in Bethlehem after months of traveling, Matthew tells us they found the place where the child was, and they were overwhelmed with joy. Depends on which translation you're reading, you know. And out of this joy came a response. They bowed down, and they worshiped Jesus. Can you imagine? Wealthy, influential people, and they go into a stable, at least that's how the story goes, right? And lay down and bow down and worship the king. But you know what I really got to thinking about was, when was the last time that you experienced overwhelming joy? Can you even remember the last time when you were overwhelmed with joy? Maybe tears were falling, but it was just touched by the moment, and you're overwhelmed, you know? I think society has a way of numbing us to that kind of reaction to anything, you know? I think having such joy has to come from an unselfish heart. And I don't know about you, but society has a way of having us turn inside and becoming a little more selfish than we want to admit, you know. Who does society teach us to look out for? Number one. And of course, to look out for our families, right? And we're really quick to say when an opportunity comes by, what's in it for me, right? Or if I do that, what do I get? I know. And I think if you ask most Americans, they wouldn't be ashamed to say that they live for themselves and for their families. And on the surface, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? That we want to take care of our family. But then they say, well, but I don't really have time to help other people in need. You know what? If I take care of my family, they should take care of their family too. And we kind of start focusing on what we want our family to have, and what they feel is going to benefit ourselves so we can get that promotion at work. And I got to thinking, come on now. Who do we really put first in our lives? Do we really put God first in our lives? Can you really say, when I go to think about what I'm going to do, I first sit, get down on my knees, and I say, God, what do you want me to do? Okay, occasionally, if things are really bad, right? We might do that, but it's not usually God we put first. And you know what the problem with that is? That, ironically, the selfish mode that we seem to be in as Americans, it condemns people, it condemns us to live in these really shallow, unrewarding lives. One of those lives we say, so what? One of those lives where we don't really experience joy in much of anything that we do. And have you noticed, no matter how much you acquire, no matter how much you have for your family, no matter what you give your kids, that's a good example, are they ever satisfied? Don't they always want more? Who do you think they learned that from, by the way? And then you look at your bills and you wonder how you can keep everything that you just bought it. Thank heaven the bills don't come to January, that's what I say. It's a recipe for an unrewarding life, because the secret to having a rewarding life is what? Learn to be a giver. Because we are created to give worship, to love one another. We weren't created to simply please ourselves. And if you miss this truth, you miss this abundant, this overflowing joy, this love that can be in your heart that God really has in store for us. But we're so busy storing up other things, we don't have room for what God has us to store up. Look at how many of the storage sheds around are rented, are full, or the garages, or the basements. And when you reach out to other people in need, I have found that God will supply your needs. And I think we need far less than we ever want to admit to. You know, God gave his son to us on Christmas Day. And in return, what did God's son do? Gave his life for us, for the redemption of the world. So I was thinking, if you're lonely today, don't sit around and feel sorry for yourself. Go help somebody else who is lonely. And if you're down and discouraged, don't sit around and focus on your needs. Because I don't know about you, when I'm down and discouraged, who am I looking at? It's me. I'm the one that's down, right? Go meet somebody else's needs if your needs aren't being met, right? Somebody needs your smile. Somebody needs your love. Somebody out there needs your encouragement. And you know what? You need to help somebody else, because God never created you to be totally independent and to not need others. We really do need one another. There was a story that really got to me. I think it ran about 17 or 18 years ago. Couldn't tell you for sure. But there were these set of twins that were born. Some of you aren't old enough to know this story. But one, it was a boy and a girl, and the girl was born with a problem with her heart. Wasn't expected to live. And the baby was really close to death. So one of the nurses that was in there said, let's put them together. The hospital said, no, we can't do that. That's against policy. But she put her job on the line, and she went out there until they finally broke hospital policy, and they put the two together. And when they put them together in the incubator, the little boy somehow raised his hand up and put his arm, they have pictures of this, on his little sister. All of a sudden, she began to stabilize. All of a sudden, the heart began to beat, and to beat strongly. And wouldn't you know it, her blood pressure stabilized, and over the next few months, she became perfectly healthy again. They're, I don't know, 18, 19, 21, I don't know, something like that. But that nurse became a blessing to them, and they began to bless each other. And I got to thinking, what? How would our lives change as a church? How would our lives change as individuals if we decided that this was the year that we would be a blessing to everyone else that we ran into, rather than focused on our own needs? What if you centered your life this year on God instead of centering your life on yourself, which we so often? Because, you know, when we don't focus on being a blessing to others, you know, we rob others in the world of that unique blessing that they could receive through us, through God, and they never get it. And I know we're busy people, you know? I can't count how many times I've heard people say, you know, I really would like to volunteer, I really like to do something nice, but I just don't have time. But really, how long did it take? Would it take you to turn to your neighbor and, like Gunner, and say, Gunner, you're great, you play the guitar fine, or to turn to Kylie and say, thanks for playing that, or Quentin, you've got the best smile I've ever seen, or to turn to somebody else and give them a compliment, or, you know, giving a compliment doesn't take any more than a complaint, but guess what? Sometimes we're much better at judging others and giving complaints than we are to give a compliment. Turn that around. How long does it take to go to your wife and you say, I don't say this often enough, but I love you? Or to turn to your kids and say, I don't tell you this often enough, but you know what? You really are good kids and I know you're trying hard, right? You know? Or as an employer to go to somebody, this one, I know nobody hears, you're a great employee and I appreciate what you're trying to do. Or go to the boss and say, you know what? I appreciate that you're able to give me a job, right? When you get your mind off of your problems and help others, God will take care of your needs. I've never seen that to fail. Isaiah 58:6-8 says it this way, when you feed the hungry, clothe the naked, encourage the oppressed, then your life is going to break forth like dawn. Then your healing will quickly come. In other words, when you reach out to hurting people, God will make sure that your needs are taken care of too. If you want that abundant life that God promises, you must develop a lifestyle of giving. Living to give, not living to get. To have an attitude of getting up in the morning and say, now who can I bless today, instead of, well, I wonder how I can get blessed today. And we do. We wait to be blessed, don't we? We get up thinking of ourselves. You know, God isn't even asking you to travel 1,000 miles on camelback. Glad of that, right? Not asking you to go through the heat of the desert like the wise men. There's a whole world out there that is crying for this church, is crying for you, that is needing your help and wants your blessing. You have an opportunity to live unselfishly this year. Because when you live unselfishly, you display the character of God, because God is a giver. And you are never more like God when you give. Somebody needs what you have to give today and tomorrow and every day throughout 2016. Like the wise men, we're blessed when we're willing to go beyond ourselves and give to other people. And you know, God sees every act of kindness and every act of mercy that you give, because nothing that you do goes unnoticed by God. And in due time, you too will receive the blessings beyond your expectation if you just open yourself up and give.